Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This project is just going to depress me.
I think it'll be fun.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 3, Alternative Lifestyles. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello.
I thought that this was titled something else and that a later episode in this season, for reasons that will become apparent, was called Alternative Lifestyles instead. Either way, it's a stinky title.
Yes.
Speaking of stinky, Again With This, episode 200.
Wow.
Again With This is not stinky, but we'll be watching Brian Austin Green in That 90s Show. That drops July 19th, which is close to Green's birthday, which is why we are celebrating it in this fashion. And coincidentally, the episode that he's in is called The Birthday Girl. It's season 1, episode 7 of That 90s Show, and it is on Netflix. We will link it in the show notes. Buckle up.
Do buckle up at againwiththispodcast.com/club for all the information that you need to join us on Patreon. Let's get into this episode, starting with our B plot. Mitch and Gail can no longer stand to be in each other. Mitch has just ordered a sassy Dawson to school after a debate about new rules governing Dawson and Joey's access to each other, which we'll get to in the A plot. When Mitch complains that Dawson is becoming a master of manipulation, Gail saltily says he probably learned from Mitch, since they both know how to rationalize their sexual impulses. Mitch reminds us of what this fight is about and says he's not going to force Gail to accept an open marriage if she's against it. He can just cheat on her behind her back, he does not add. Gail says she's not for an open marriage, but if Mitch needs it to get back at her, that's fine. And Mitch stammers that they can drop it. She's relieved and kisses him and seems to think that means they're okay. They're not. Later, Mitch is scraping barnacles off a boat, not a euphemism, when some dude from work drops Gail off, not the one she had the affair with, but he does give her a teeny tiny kiss on the lips, which, like, even with this minimal amount of contact, inappropriate to me. Don't kiss your work colleague on the lips.
Yeah.
Indeed, he sees and clenches his jaw, ignoring Gail's greeting when she comes up to the porch. She ignores that and starts bitching about her terrible day. Mitch casually asks why she didn't call him when her car wouldn't start instead of getting a lift from this Frank from accounting. Gail can't believe he's mad about that, but Mitch can't help how he feels. His trust is gone and he doesn't know how to get it back. So he brings up open marriage again. Maybe if they take away the rules, his need to trust her will go with them. She looks disgusted, and considering that he said he would drop it earlier, he sure does have a whole plan ready to pitch. Clip 2.
From this moment on, Thursday night is date night. We can go out with whomever we want, do whatever we want, whenever we want. And the only rule is we're honest about it. See, there's no need to lie. An open marriage allows us that.
Okay, this is clearly a vengeance opening of the marriage for Mitch. Like, I am not a poly person.
Neither, because
I am a petty person and also extremely disorganized, and polyamorous situations really seem like a lot of admin to me. I'm only polyamorous in the sense of, you know, work spouses, but I really feel like the ones that I know of personally that are successful rely on less information and not, say, Mitch coming home and being like, I got my barnacles scraped to the parking lot of the ice house.
Yeah.
I mean, he's allowed to be petty and mad.
Yeah, of course.
And want to get back at her, but like, just do that. And also do that on your own show that we don't watch because nobody cares.
Seriously. I saw such a funny tweet or Blue Sky message this week that was like, is there polyamory, but just for childcare? Which I thought was great. Speaking of the admin, like, can we all pool our resources and like someone just looks after the children instead of fucking? Because that's actually what I need.
Yeah, we had this conversation, me and my neighbors being like, yeah, we kind of miss lockdown pods in terms of like pet care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, now we got to pay. Boo.
So then Gail in her cute dress are lighting candles at the dinner table. Mitch enters in a polo and chinos, and somehow this look does not signal to her that he's on his way to a hot date. So he has to tell her he will not be dining with her because he made other plans. It's Thursday, which, I don't know, man, I didn't hear her agree to that arrangement, but he goes, and then she sadly blows the taper out. And half a scene later, she's humiliating herself by telling her son and his girlfriend that if Mitch comes back, Dawson should say it's Thursday, so she went out. And then we see Gail at a cafe that gets a lot of play later in this episode. She's wandering past episode writer Mike White on her way to her own table. You can spot him in the visual aids. And if this was even 2 years later, Mike would totally have a laptop out working on a screenplay, and so would have the other patrons. But you can see in the shot, I believe the one I caught, he has his hands up like he's about to start typing, but there is no laptop. You can see it's just like the sense memory that he's doing.
A face ache. Oh, amazing. I didn't even notice that. Good catch.
Go back and watch the scene, listener. So Gail sits and sips her coffee alone. And at the same moment, Mitch is in a local bar, also not talking to anyone. And we cut from one to the other as they have no idea what to do. And then Mitch and his sexless flannel pajama pants are getting ready to get into bed. Gail comes out, making slightly more of an effort in a silky robe and nightie. They both lie that they had fun. She asks what he did. He claims he met some new people, danced, hung out a little. She claims she met a friend for drinks and then rolls over, saying she hopes he had fun. And if this is intended to make Mitch wonder what more she's not telling him, seems like it works. That's where we leave it with these two for now. Wrap it up. Split up or stay together. This is torture. On to the A plot. Everyone learns home economics in the most emotionally fraught way possible. We open this 7/8 of the episode on Mitch pulling the ladder down from Dawson's window for quite obvious reasons. Dawson follows him into the house, hectoring him like he was hectoring Joey around the ice house in the last episode. Dawson announces that Mitch is in denial that his kid is a sexual being. Barf. Mitch would obviously like to know whether that means Dawson and Joey are having sex, which Dawson says they aren't, using the phrase sexual being 17 more times in the process. Dawson wants Mitch to accept his new SB status so that they can have an honest relationship. Mitch just wants to know the only thing I personally think parents need to know about their children's sex lives, which is whether he is having any. Dawson repeats that he's not, but one day he will, and removing ladders and locking doors won't prevent that, so Mitch should just let him and Joey hang out in his room unsupervised. Mitch says that will not be happening, which is when Dawson goes in his room, closes the door, and reveals that Joey's been hiding in his closet the whole time. They think they've gotten the best of Mitch and are making out when Mitch opens the door and grounds Dawson, and I say good, because I have fully crossed the line into crotchety old parents' side of this argument, which, honestly, I think I was already there in 1998.
I think I was, too, and I seem to recall clocking Dawson for a super condescending attitude towards his parents that, like, it's not at Brandon Walsh high-handed, everyone here works for me levels, but it's also a little that he's like, come on, dad, don't be such a square. And his dad's like, that's what dads are.
Right.
You're grounded. Good. Yes. Team Mitch in this part of the plot, anyway.
In this narrow, narrow instance.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, there is chaos at the Potter house, which only increases when Bessie bursts in, begging Joey to stop at the ice house on her way to school and make sure it's clean enough for an imminent health inspection, which seems like something a teenager can do alone in the 8 minutes between now and her first class, which we never actually see her go before school or make any reference to having done so, which surely there was a more efficient way to establish that a health inspection was imminent than this. At the Leary house, Dawson seems to think he can argue his way out of Mitch's rules by reminding Mitch how he probably ignored his parents' sex rules when he was a teenager, not understanding that parents' rules just are. They are not subject to logic. Not that that is what Mitch says. Clip 3.
But that was the whole fun of being 15, Dawson. I mean, it was the fear of getting caught that made it more dangerous and exciting.
So by restricting my access to joy, what you're really trying to do is liven up my sex life? Do you hear that, Mom?
What's sex life?
Now you're twisting my words again, Dawson. Go to school.
Do you ever notice that whenever your parental authority is in question, you just start barking out orders?
Go. Now.
This is exactly what you're talking about. Perfect example. Yeah. So I don't care for the way Mitch pronounced dangerous in that clip one bit.
Yeah. No.
Abby and Jen are clomping into school on their platform slides when Abby asks Jen which of two generic jocks we've never seen before she would prefer to fool around with. It's neither for Jen on the grounds that they're gym rats with no cultural interests, but that is apparently how Abby likes them. What I like is that someone on the hair team has figured out Jen's. You can see this in the visual aids. They seem to have like cut off the sides a little bit and thinned it and done more razoring. Looks better, for sure.
Yeah.
Abby reminds us that Jen is still hung up on Dawson, and while Abby thinks that's disgusting, she orders Jen to make it happen. Inside, Andy begs Pacey for his notes on their econ reading. She's new, so he has to explain that he did not take notes on the reading he did not do, and she looks shocked, as you can see in the visual aids, excessively, in my opinion, for what she already knows about him, but sure.
Mm-hmm.
If their teacher calls on her, Pacey says she should just do what he does, say pass. Like it's a game show. I don't know.
Yeah, that wouldn't have flown in classes that you were trying to pass, but
yeah,
Pacey's got his own way.
He sure does. Andy spins out about this one missed assignment ruining the rest of her life, so Pacey has to remind her that she's rich. She won't end up in the streets. She'll end up in Florida. No comment out of respect for our wonderful listeners in the Sunshine State. We love you. Mm-hmm. Cut to the teacher asking Andy the difference between microeconomics and macroeconomics, and Andy mumbling pass in great shame so that another student named Kenny can nail it and also give us all a segue to their assignment for the week. They're going to pair up for a project on the microeconomics of a household. Mr. Maddox is the name of the teacher, even though you are going to later hear people call him Mr. Maddox, not his name. He has titled this assignment Alternative Lifestyles for reasons he does not explain, other than giving the episode its ham-handed title and misleading us with expectations that are not satisfied. They are not choosing their own partners, but it's okay. Mr. Maddox's hat immediately has Andy choosing Pacey's name because it understands what we're here for. Pacey is a bus driver, Andy is a sales clerk, and they have three kids. Mr. M says they are a lower middle class family, but what I just heard is Pacey has a government job with union benefits, so I think they're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Abby picks Kenny and immediately asks to switch partners as poor Kenny blushes and wilts. The jock we saw outside picks his buddy's name, and they celebrate until Mr. M says they are a well-to-do same-sex couple. Pediatrician and ad exec, and the buddy doesn't understand what same-sex or gay mean. Dawson picks Jen, and Mr. M says they are a super-rich stockbroker and engineer with two kids in college and a second home. There aren't any partners left by the time Mr. M gets to Joey, so she will be a successful woman raising two kids alone. Job unspecified. Hope it's not in media, because I don't know how long she's going to be super successful in that case.
Yeah.
After class, Joey bitches about the assignment, reminding her that she still doesn't know what she's going to do with her life. Dawson claims he doesn't know what he's going to do either, but Joey goes on at length about his future success as a movie director, which too soon after the diary debacle. She then pouts that it's all going to depress her. Dawson thinks it'll be fun, and Joey flirt needles him about his hat-assigned partner, whose excitement at their pairing Joey noticed. Dawson says Joey has nothing to worry about, which is when Jen and Abby enter. Jen's staring longingly at Dawson, and Joey's like, famous last words.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
After the commercials, Jen still has Dawson in her tractor beams, forcing a grossed out Abby to tell her to A, quit drooling, and B, put their project time to effective use. I am paraphrasing because Abby's version includes grab him by the dipstick. Ugh. Jen says there's no point since Dawson is in love with Joey, but Abby says he's a 15-year-old boy. He doesn't know what love is. He only knows he's horny all the time. This is when poor Kenny comes by the table to talk about the assignment. Abby tells him just to do it and put her name on it. And as he drifts off, Abby tells Jen she needs to show Dawson what the old naughty Jen was like. And Jen acts like she's not so sure, but her mischievous smile tells a different story. At the ice house that night, Joey walks into the kitchen just in time to see Jack pouring mop water all over the floor and yelps at him that he's doing it wrong, which of course he is. If he's never washed dishes, he's obviously never mopped before either. Put it together. Show him how to do shit. Jack testily says he knows he's made some blunders, but he's not a total idiot. Joey takes over and tells him to go wipe counters, which he does, causing a clatter and nearly smashing into Bessie on his way out. Bessie sees the floor and asks if they had a flood. Joey does not snitch on Jack's fuck-up, but asks if they can push some of this cleanup a day, which of course they cannot. Health inspection imminent, but Joey has her project to think about. Clip 4.
I have to prepare a household budget for a single career mother, and I have no idea what I'm doing.
I'm virtually a single career mother. I can help you. What do you need to know?
Thanks, Bess, but you're not exactly the model for this assignment.
Why not?
First of all, she's a super successful career woman with $150,000 income.
Joey, maybe I'm not super successful, but if there's one thing I do know how to do, it's budget money.
You know, you're right. I should get some advice. Find a career woman who's actually living this assignment and ask her for help.
Hello? I'll do it. You keep cleaning and I'll advise.
Thanks, Bess, but you can barely get your bills paid on time. I mean, I appreciate the offer, but I think I'll find somebody else.
Oof.
Bad sister.
Yeah.
Oh my God, so rude.
Yeah.
Bessie looks wounded, which is understandable because she has a bad sister. And then they have to go home together. And even though that scene clearly took place at night after close at the ice house, the next one is daylight at a coffee shop with Pacey and Andy in the same clothes they were wearing in class. Time continues to make no sense.
Yep.
Mega day looping back on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Pacey's looking at a brochure for a sports car while Andy bleats at him to quit fucking around because they're $30,000 over their household budget. Pacey doesn't need a jacuzzi as long as he can have his Viper. Andy rules it out, asking where they're going to live, because since they have 3 kids, she thinks they need a 4-bedroom house. But Pacey scoffs that kids don't need their own rooms, and not everyone had a fairy princess childhood like Andy's. She mutters that she wants a divorce, which is fine with Pacey. She can keep the kids and he'll get his car. And no, when she asks, he is not embarrassed to live down to male stereotypes. Andy says he can have his Viper if they can find a decent 2-bedroom apartment, which is compromising too much, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Zillow doesn't exist yet, so they're going to have to go look at places in person, which, hell yeah, waste a landlord's time. They deserve it. Fuck a landlord. Over to Jen's room, where Dawson and Jen are pleasantly debating whether to send their kids to state school or somewhere in the Ivy League. Jen cracks up that they actually seem like they're married, and who knows, in 20 years, maybe they will be. Dawson does not take the bait, changing the subject to the warm weather destinations they might like to visit in the winter and whether they should bring the kids. Jen thinks the kids are probably sick of their parents and it's more romantic if they don't all go, and pressing her boob against his arm, she goes on. Clip 5.
God, Dawson, we've agreed on practically every aspect of married life. I don't think we could really be more compatible. You know, it's kind of a relief to say that you and me can still hang out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, there's moments when it feels like nothing's really changed between us. Kind of like right now.
Well, we probably did enough work for tonight. What do you think?
Dawson, if you happen to get any inspiration on the assignment or, you know, just want to talk, whatever, I'm here for you. My door's always open. If you know what I mean.
I think so.
Oh my God. Why?
Exactly.
So painful.
I mean, I know that Abby already counseled her, like, he's 15 and a boy and an idiot, so she's not putting on her subtlest display, but even he is like, it's too much. I mean, we're going to hear it later, but still.
Yeah.
Jen, my God.
Honey, no. I just also like to say, at the time when we were recapping this, I repeatedly rode Michelle Williams for walking like a dancing bear. Mm-hmm. I don't think I realized what size of flatform clodhopper they were putting her tiny, tiny feet in. So She shouldn't have them on Dawson's bed later, but I ask her retroactive forgiveness for that, because there is, I mean, it's like stilts. They're so tall.
Right. I mean, all the other three leads are all so much taller than Michelle Williams. Like, This is probably it's this or apple boxes solution. And like,
yeah, probably.
Sometimes she has to be moving and we have to have both of them in the same frame, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a good note. The next day, a landlady smokes as she shows Pacey and Andy around the derelict apartment she is trying to rent as is. Andy asks if Pacey still wants that Viper, and Pacey irritatedly asks if they aren't taking their research too far, considering the assignment's due tomorrow and they still haven't actually written anything. The argument goes on. Andy is way over preparing. Pacey is lazy. She thinks his rebelliousness is a pose, so he exposits that he's the black sheep of his family and will be no matter how much or little he succeeds at anything. And she narrows her eyes, not because she's already gotten a version of the speech in each of her previous episodes since she arrived in Capeside, though she has, but because she feels bad. Clip 6.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, of course not. You were too busy getting into character. Oh, I'm just a sales clerk, a poor little sales clerk looking for an apartment. You want to know the reason that this assignment is so fascinating to you? In reality, you've never had a problem in your entire life. You drive around in your Saab, you buy your new clothes, and you basically just throw your money away. The idea that people actually have to budget their monthly income is like some fascinating novelty to you. You're rich and you're spoiled, and that's what it comes down to.
You know what? You're right. I don't know anything about you, and you know even less about me, so just leave me alone!
Andy, wait. Hey.
Okay. What? So the bouncy...
Oh, look, it's Barney Miller here to help with Pacey's assignment. What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, that segues to, I cut it off before we get the landlady leaning out the window to ask if they're going to take the place or not. So that's like the comedy end of the scene. But like, this scene does not need a comedy end. That was fucking rough. Mm-hmm. Like, Pacey is a nice guy. He doesn't want to make girls cry. Like, this is too much of a whiplash to close things out.
Yeah. Also, see my remarks, I think, in the previous episode might have been the one before about Pacey's whole, like, black sheep, I don't even know, jacket, I guess? It's like, you'd think that he was up on posters in the post office.
Yes.
Really bring it down a notch.
The idea that the post office has a list of top 10, like, losers. Damn, that's it.
Yeah. Or, like, the other nine are actual sheep. Named George. And then one of them has, like, a blue tag and gold teeth. And then there's Pacey, who's, like, number 7. Jesus.
Elsewhere, Joey's at a design firm to find out how successful single mothers have it all. Her contact is Laura Weston, played by Tamara Taylor. She is so successful that the company is named for her. Mr. Maddock put them in contact, telling Joey that Laura was the embodiment of a successful career woman, which is something Laura never thought she would be. Joey thinks she must have always been ambitious to have ended up where she is, but a few years ago, she was the quintessential housewife. as she puts it. She had always loved drawing as a kid, so she decided to go back to school, and now she teaches art and works as an interior designer. If she is single, they don't say that that's part of it, like you assume. And then I got divorced and I had to make a life for myself, but she doesn't actually say that part.
Right.
They are designing a chain of Mexican restaurants, and Laura shows Joey the plans. Joey is polite and is like, looks great, but Laura tells her to actually look, and sure enough, Joey says the kitchen and the bar are at opposite ends of the restaurant, which means servers will have to put in drink and food orders separately, so everything will take twice as long. And shout out to the assistant who gets no lines, but does get a nice long shot of her face as she gets annoyed by all the work Joey just created for her. But like, assistant, this is basic shit.
Uh-huh.
Laura asks to pick Joey's brain on some of her other designs, and Joey would love to. And then we're back at that cafe. Abby can't believe a week into the assignment, Jen still has not made anything happen with Dawson. This is where we see Kenny's also with them, but that Abby has made him sit one table over. Abby asks what he thinks of Joey, and he says she's hot. Abby says he wouldn't know since he is practically wall-eyed. So Kenny decides this is the time to try to get Abby to pitch in, which she does not plan to do. And we can tell Jen's on the wrong track in life, because as Abby's being openly abusive to Kenny, Jen just laughs.
Ugh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Bad, mm-hmm. bad look for Jen, and out of character, in my opinion.
Yep. Abby concedes that Joey has a fresh face J. Crew catalog appeal, and yes, we get the meta reference, Mike White, but that Jen is a sex kitten. Abby's not necessarily saying Jen should take off all her clothes and throw herself at Dawson, but this is their last night, so she has to go for broke. Later, Dawson and Joey are hanging out on the porch. She invites him to the ice house to watch her clean, it sounds like, but he has to stay and finish the assignment with Jen. Joey taunts that she's already done, then enthuses about how helpful Laura was and that she offered Joey an internship. She made Joey realize she could run her own company someday. Dawson condescendingly says, Joey, referring to her in the third person, to her. I think this is the start of this tick of like little Joey Potter, this or that.
Little Joey Potter. Yeah. Uh-huh.
He doesn't say little, but it's
coming.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he says, you know, condescendingly notes that Joey has some career aspirations after all. And once Gail has made her embarrassing exit, as previously discussed, Joey realizes this means they have the house to themselves. And is kissing on Dawson when Jen appears in a very slip-like slip dress. She offers to come back later, but Joey was just leaving. And clip 7.
Nice dress. Thanks, I borrowed it. I bet.
Ooh, that's good.
Ooh, okay.
I thought that was not bad. It's very economical writing. Mm-hmm. Seductively narrowing her eyes, Jen says she and Dawson should work somewhere they can be comfortable. His bedroom. And then, remember the jocks that got paired up as a gay couple saving for their wedding? Well, they're finishing up their assignment at the ice house. And clip 8.
Why do we need 2 Range Rovers? Compromise, Jeff. A couple weeks in Europe, drive a cheaper car.
Huh, fine. You want the honeymoon, you drive the cheaper car, okay?
Look, man, you're so selfish. Why do you act like that?
Yeah, I'm selfish. You always act like
that. This worked on me, I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you could see it coming from the second it was assigned, but it was also well done. Good job, Mike White.
Yes. It really felt like a reaction to the gay panic of the day, where it's just like, these guys are acting like a couple and that's fine. You know, mm-hmm. We don't think they are one, but this is what they've been assigned and they're locking into their roles, you know? Joey comes in commenting that the place is a mess. When Jack has gone back to the kitchen, Joey opens wide to put her foot in her mouth again. Clip 9.
Hey, Bessie, I was telling Laura about our financial problems.
Who's Laura?
Well, she's the interior designer who helped me with my project.
Oh, right. The super successful career woman.
Anyway, she had some really good ideas. I mean, ways to keep our overhead costs down. And Laura also said she could help us design a new logo for the ice house. I mean, we could print new menus, placemats.
We don't need new menus or placemats.
She said she could do it for free. She said it's crucial for businesses to revamp their look every so often and keep things fresh.
Joey, I don't have time to listen to advice from some woman that knows nothing about me or my life or the ice house.
Look, she's just trying to help.
I don't need her help. I need your help now. The health department called. They're coming tomorrow morning to do the inspection, and this place is a total disaster.
Look, you don't have to snap at me like it's my fault.
Well, I thought you were coming in here earlier. We needed you tonight.
I'm sorry, Bessie. I actually have a life. I am not your full-time slave.
Full-time slave? That's a bit of an exaggeration.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Because I feel like all I ever do is run your errands, answer your phone calls, take care of your baby, and I'm sick of it.
Hey, where should I...
Look, Joy, I'm really sorry my baby and I are cramping your style. Why don't you go home? Jack and I have it covered.
What you can see in the visual aids is that moment where Jack comes out and is like, hey, do I... Oh, never mind. He just like slips away in the middle of the fight. It's very funny.
Yeah.
But the rest of that, rough stuff. Don't open with, I was telling Laura about our financial problems. Like, listen to what's coming out of your mouth. This is not what Bessie wants a stranger to hear about her.
Yeah, but that's at the same time such a teenager thing.
Right. Yes.
To do, to just like put that shit on Front Street to some grown up who takes you seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That read very real to me. And despite the fact that I feel like they would have had this fight a bunch of times, but like not at the Ice House.
Yeah.
It was probably time for like viewers to see this fight between the sisters. So,
yeah.
I mean, cringe, but it was well done.
I agree. After commercial, Pacey enters. Jack says they're closed, but Pacey just wants a cup of coffee. Jack goes to get it, and they establish that each knows who the other is. And then it's Pacey's turn to jam his foot down his throat. Clip 10.
Listen, is your sister on any medication? Because she just went completely ballistic on me.
What'd you do to her?
Nothing. I just called her a spoiled princess. She goes psycho. You know, I guess the truth hurts sometimes.
Andy, a spoiled princess. I don't think anything could be further from the truth.
Oh, come on. Don't try and tell me your family's not totally loaded.
You think I'm working here for kicks?
Yeah, but your sister drives a Saab, man, and all those nice clothes.
Well, it's the last remains of a decaying dynasty.
I don't get it.
Look, there was a time when things were easy for us. I mean, relatively, but I mean, those days are over now. Look, I really don't want to get into this. Just do me a favor. Give Andy a break, you know? She deserves it.
Aw.
Yeah. It is funny, though, to hear. I mean, I know they're obviously going somewhere with it, but for Pacey to, like, joke about, you know, is your sister on medication? Like, we're going to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is. But it also feels very of the time of, like, you need to up your Prozac dose. Like, you wouldn't hear that now, you know?
Yeah, no.
Because maybe someone is on Prozac and they do need to up their dose. It's not a joking matter.
Yeah.
Back to Dawson's room where Jen is sex kittening on his bed or trying to. And she's, as Sarah mentioned, in platform wedge sandals. Char, bit much for the occasion. But Dawson's on the other side of the room at his desk trying to ignore whatever she's trying to do, saying they're finally done. So she gets up and leans over the desk, pressing her boobs together as she tells him how tired she is. Dawson sure is, too, in a less boob-forward way. Jen comes around behind his chair and offers a massage, resting her boobs on his shoulders in the process. He declines nervously. Jen says she's so tired, she probably can't even make it the 30 yards back to her house. Clip 11.
Do you mind if I just crash here for the night?
Actually, yeah, I do.
What?
Well, yeah, I do mind. I think you should probably go home.
What? So we can't hang out together anymore? Is that it?
No, absolutely we can hang out together. We just can't sleep together.
Oh, whoa. Calm down, Dawson. God, I was just asking if I could crash at your house. Nobody said anything about sleeping together. I know what it is. It's Joey, isn't it? She's been putting ideas in your head about me.
No, Jen, Joey is not putting any ideas in my head about me. I'm not oblivious.
Meaning?
Well, I mean, look at you. You know, I mean, is this what you normally wear to a study session? I mean, you've been making, you know, suggestive comments and touching me all night. I've been trying to be...
Dawson, if you can't handle being in the same room with me, I think...
Okay, look, I can handle being in the same room with you. I just can't handle you throwing yourself at me every other second. I mean, don't you find it humiliating?
I'm not humiliating anybody, Dawson.
Are you?
And I know that you're with Joey, and I accept that.
I just don't respect it.
Oh, okay. I hate everything that's happening, but that line was good, and his reaction is hilarious.
Yeah.
You can see it in the visual aids, obviously.
I mean, credit to both of them. They play it perfectly so that I just could barely look at the screen while it was happening. But yeah. Oh my God.
I know.
I'm humiliated. Great job, everybody.
Mm-hmm. So it's not over, Calypso 12.
And I don't mean this in a slutty, self-degrading sort of way, but I want to let you know that you've got options. And I'm one of them.
Who are you? What happened to Jen?
She got bored. She decided to liven things up a bit.
I mean, I get being bored.
Yeah, same. We'll liven him up with Cliff. I know he's not on the show anymore, but you had your chance. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Anyway, she imposes a kiss on him. It's not even, you can't even really say they kiss. She launches herself at him and he's like, all right. She then struts out, stopping in the doorway to turn back and say she hopes that Dawson can handle it. And then we see her stop at the top of the stairs and swoon a little bit, but we don't yet know why or what's happening in her head or what she's flashing back to, but I guess we will. Then Bessie's coming home, having been up all night cleaning. She abruptly says Joey's fired. Joey knows what she's doing. Clip 13.
I couldn't sleep last night. I felt so bad. Those things that I said, I didn't mean.
Yes, you did. Joey, you're right. I'm in way over my head. I live in total chaos. But these problems, they're not yours. I don't want to be the one robbing you of your childhood. You should be out having fun and being young, not burdened by all my messes. It's not fair. It's not fair to you, and I'm sorry.
Bessie, these are my problems. Because you and I are a team, you know? You can't fire me. Because I'm not going anywhere, and I won't be fired. And I love you. I'm Alexander. And I don't ever want you to feel like you're in this alone.
Yeah, but you're my little sister. I'm supposed to be taking care of you.
You do. God, you do take care of me, Bessie.
You know, one day, I'll get it together and you'll be proud of me.
Oh, God. Bessie, dream bigger.
Yeah. Also, they're not your messes. They're your father's messes.
Great point.
A. Mm. B, I understand that they probably couldn't pay for both actors, but does Bodie want to pick up a chamois and help out with any of this shit? He's the cook. Hello?
Yeah.
Where's he?
Yeah, I mean, I know they write him out of the show eventually by saying, like, he got a job on a cruise ship, but that has not been established yet. He's just not around.
Yeah.
And Bessie saying, like, I'm basically a single mom. Like, well, last season you had a partner who lived in the house with you, so.
Yeah, and was the source of quite a bit of retrograde conversation amongst your clearly northern community. Eyebrow. Oh, and P.S. Get those cicada under fives, their checks, because it's after the season.
Great point. Joey says she already is proud of Bessie and this assignment gave her a new appreciation for everything Bessie does and Bessie is touched. Great. Then we're in econ class. Mr. Maddock lectures everyone that unlike many assignments they do, this one taught them practical lessons they can use later in life, so he hopes they gave it their full attention. I obviously hope this ends up being most true for the jocks and that it helped them figure out some things about themselves and each other. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. They don't have to be gay to be funny. Clip 14.
Oh, Jeff, how'd that wedding turn out?
Great, Mr. Maddox. We decided for a casual one by the ocean. You know, just
close friends and family. Yeah, that way we could spend more money on the honeymoon.
Good decision, Trey.
On the honeymoon. That's how people talk in Massachusetts.
Sure is. I totally agree.
Then Jesus. Kenny, this actor, also clearly a local hire based on his accent, announces that Abby's name's only on the report because she threatened his life but that she did not do shit. Abby claims it's because Kenny was covered in snot and she didn't want to catch anything. Mr. Maddox has somehow noticed that Andy didn't hand anything in, and she explains that she only did her half. Enter Pacey, handing in a whole ass binder for both of them, and Andy's stunned, but maybe sees Pacey in a whole new light. And after school, Dawson's glad the project's over. Joey liked it, and Dawson condescendingly teases her about having aspirations and calls her by her full name again because he sucks. She has not figured that out yet, though, and is kissing him when Abby and Jen roll up, Abby muttering at them to get a room. Joey asks what that was, and Dawson lies that he has no idea. And then Andy's thanking Pacey for finishing the project. She guesses she can't call him lazy anymore. Pacey apologizes for his false impression and tells her what Jack told him, which I would maybe keep to myself, but whatever, I guess he assumes Jack would tell her too.
Mm.
Andy shrugs that her life's like a movie of the week and it's probably best left clear of their current truce. He agrees not to ask anything more, but she wants to know if they got the Viper. After all they've been through, could he have possibly done it, he asks. But then she gives him a head cock and he admits he totally did, and they are living in a one-bedroom apartment because of it.
Oh.
Oh, Pacey. And as they're walking by, fondly bickering, the camera pans down to a car's side view mirror in which we see reflected... Dun, dun, dun! Tamara! She's back! Oh, no! Ooh, we'll find out where this goes in the next episode.
Yeah, we will.
Let's close it up by naming our MVP.
Jack, I think.
I was going to say that, too. He helped broker peace between Andy and Pacey and learn to clean, apparently well enough to maybe pass a health inspection. That's not nothing.
Mm-hmm. Good for him.
Least valuable player.
Abby, mm-hmm. At least play nice long enough to get the nerds to do your bidding. That actor did show up in a legendary SVU, so still had the accent, though, amazingly. But yeah, Abby, not only that, but what you're devoting your time to instead of the assignment is getting Jen's leg over Dawson.
Yeah.
And it's not working. Sorry, girl. You're the 11th sheep on the poster.
Yeah. Relatedly, I'm going to say Jen, because get some dignity, aim higher. Like Sarah said, mm-hmm. We know Cliff has gone to a different show, but surely there are other options somewhere.
Mm-hmm. That show's set in New York. Oh, no. Okay. God damn it. Every time he tries to break me, it works. But let's see what happens. Next time on Again With This, Tamara's back and we're gonna be in trouble. And by we, I mean Mitch, who's using Tamara as his realtor and a question mark, Andy, who's starting to like Pacey, and the audience, who is still not buying this felony as a star-crossed relationship, although I guess it's better than the bizarre tea love triangle cropping up among Joey, Dawson, and Jack. Speaking of art, Tara's gifts of key episodic moments. Find those and other crucial snapshots from this and every other episode of the podcast so far in our visual aids. Those are at againwiththispodcast.com. And join our Patreon for tons of extra episodes and access to our Discord, againwiththispodcast.com/club. I am novice mopper Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Borrowed Delia's mini slip dress, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, thought he'd liven things up a bit. Talk to you next time.
Dawson's Creek is canceled. Bye-bye.
God, why?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.